Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. James Lacine has been telling stories for over 25 years. His short film, Trevor, won the Academy Award for Best Live Action Short in 1995 and went on to inspire the founding of the Trevor Project, the only nationwide 24-hour suicide prevention helpline for LGBTQ youth. James is also the founder of the After the Storm Foundation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to offering support to community centers in New Orleans that are working with youth in the arts. On Sunday, April 12th, Lacine will bring his one-man show, The Absolute Brightness of Leonard Pelkey, to the stage at Club Helsinki in Hudson, New York. In the play, James Lacine portrays various characters of a small Jersey Shore town as they struggle to understand what happened to 14-year-old Leonard Pelkey. The show begins with the discovery of Leonard's disappearance, follows a criminal investigation, and concludes with a trial that reveals the shocking truth. James Lacine, welcome to the Roundtable.
Well, thanks for having me.
The Absolute Brightness of Leonard Pelkey is based on a YA novel that you wrote. Can you tell us where the story came from and then what made you want to adapt it to a one-man show for the stage?
17 years ago, started an organization called the Trevor Project. You know, it's the only national 24-hour suicide prevention and crisis intervention lifeline for LGBT and questioning youth around the country. Mm-hmm. And because I was so immersed in that organization and the work that they do, saving lives and also intervening in crisis, I just felt like I wanted to talk about and talk to some of those young people, you know, who are in crisis, and talk about just things about being different and how difficult it is, and how difficult it is for a community, really, to integrate difference. The novel was really a novel told from the point of view of a 16-year-old girl named Phoebe, and the book came out in 2007, mm-hmm. So I was a little bit ahead of the curve in terms of what happened in 2009 and 2010 with the It Gets Better campaign and, a lot of the very highly publicized suicides that happened during that time. And I wanted to tell this story to an adult audience with a little bit of a darker twist and also a little bit more complex. So this time it's told from the point of view of the detective who is investigating the disappearance of this 14-year-old boy from this little New Jersey shore town. And I play him. I also play the 16-year-old girl. And I play some of the people in the town whose lives have been in some way affected or touched by that missing boy.
How many characters in total do you portray on stage?
I think there are 10.
That's enough. That's a lot.
Yeah.
And how do you go about creating each of them?
Well, you know, I've been doing this for a really long time.
Of course.
And it's almost like I have a company of actors, and they can be fitted to a particular story. And then somebody like Phoebe, for instance, you know, I just had to create her and listen real hard, not just to my own internal ear, but listen to kids and how they talk. And, you know, and you do basically what any writer does and what any actor does, is that you just really closely observe and then see if you can adapt to your purposes.
You are the writer of an actor in. What does that mean as you developed it? I know you've been performing it for a bit now and it's garnering amazing reviews, but as you were creating it, what does it mean to have yourself the writer in the room as you work on it? You find things that aren't quite gelling and switch them. Is that a blessing, or does it feel like you could keep noodling forever and then it's a bit of a curse?
Well, you know, it's always a challenge being the writer and the actor, and you have to, you know, I always feel like with a solo show, for me, it's really about veering away from showing off or, you know, saying, oh my God, aren't I talented, so that, you know, that it's really about the story. Mm-hmm. And I was really fortunate to be working with a wonderful, amazing director. His name is Tony Speciale, and, you know, he became my outside eye. And he's also very good at editing, so if things went on too long or if there needed to be some extra something, he was really right there to be able to kind of guide me in that direction. So that's really helpful, having another person in the room with you, not just during the performing part of it, but kind of once you get it up on its feet, working on the text.
How did you meet and decide to work with Tony Speciale on this project?
You know, I saw a play he did about 3 years ago here in New York. It was called Unnatural Acts. And I just was so impressed with the storytelling, how that story was told, and how amazing the actors were. And, you know, I really went up to him afterwards and I introduced myself. And then we did a benefit for the Trevor Project with that play, and I became friendly with him. And then when this was in development, I just approached him and showed it to him. And, you know, fortunately, he was interested.
The play also has incidental music by Duncan Sheik. How did you get music from Duncan for the show?
Well, you know, he attended an early reading of it that I did. And he really, right afterwards, he came up to me and just said, like, I'm going to write some music for this piece.
Oh.
and you know, I have to say that the generosity and the kindness that has come my way, I really think it's inspired by the story. You know, it's just people get really, really entranced by this story. And, you know, the way that I work, I don't use costumes, I don't use wigs, I don't use scenery, I don't use anything except my voice and my body and the story. So it really relies on the audience bringing their imagination into the theater, which, you know, in my experience, it's the greatest unused resource in the American theater. You know, most of the time people go to the theater and a lot of the work is done for them, you know, the sets, the costumes and stuff. But actually when you give them the information, they're so great. They're the best costume designers. they're the best set designers. And they love a good story. So it's a little bit like visual radio, you mm-hmm. know, what I do. You know, I become and inhabit the characters, but the audience becomes my partner in imagining everything to perfection.
Why do you think it is that so much of the American theater doesn't ask people to use their imaginations more?
Well, I think there's a real place for it. You know, it's entertaining, fun. You know, people like to sit back and have that done for them, and there's nothing wrong with that.
The Trevor Project was founded, as you mentioned, in 1998. When it began then, could you imagine that it would still be running now, that we would still need it now? And what has your experience with the Trevor Project meant for you personally?
Well, you know, I started it, it started from a story also. You know, mm-hmm. I was performing a one-man show in 1998 called Word of Mouth, and I was doing it off-Broadway, and filmmaker Peggy Reisky and Randy Stone, they came to see the show and asked me if I would adapt a part of that show into a short film. And that film was called Trevor. It was about a 13-year-old kid who, through a series of diary entries, he begins to understand that he's different from his family, from his friends, and he tries to commit suicide. It's very funny, believe it or not. It was also very poignant.
I do. I've seen it. It won the Oscar for live-action short film that year.
And it did, incredibly.
Yeah,
amazing.
It's wonderful.
And then when, you know, Randy made some, you know, he made some arrangements with HBO to put it on TV, Randy and Peggy and I thought it would be a good idea to put a telephone number at the end, and there was no telephone number for lesbian and gay teens at that time. So within like a 3-month period, we really had to make that happen. And that first night that Trevor aired, we got over 1,500 telephone calls from around the country.
Wow.
Which was astonishing to us and kind of an indication of how much need there was. And, you know, at the time, we didn't even know what the response would be. Since then, we've had a pretty strong, steady presence within the LGBT community and really, you know, reaching into the country, helping young people to cross this divide into adulthood, and just letting them know that whoever they are, it's totally okay. And we're here for them 24/7. And we'll see them through that period of their life when they have nobody to talk to. You know, for me personally, it's just a miracle, you know, in my life. But it taught me something about the power of story, how incredible a story can sometimes be and how it can go out and really actually change the world. You know, it's a very powerful experience when I meet a young person, you know, in their 20s or 30s, and, you know, that they come up to me and say, you know, Trevor saved my life. There's no award that can beat that. When you see a living person standing in front of you and know that they're here because of a story that I once told, you know, that's a kind of an amazing experience for me. And it's encouraged me to tell more stories and to also try to tell stories of people who don't get an opportunity so much to tell their stories.
You finished a run of The Absolute Brightness of Leonard Peltke at Dixon Place in New York City just recently, and you're bringing it to Hudson for one night only. Is there a plan for the show after this run in Hudson, or are you taking a rest from it for a little while?
No, I'm just getting started.
Okay.
No, there's a lot of hope for it, and we're making plans to figure out what the next step is and what's the best step for the show and how can we keep it going so that as many people as possible can see it. There seemed to be, like I said, there was so much goodwill and there was so much good press and people loved it, and there wasn't enough room or time to allow everybody to see it, so it seems like the demand is there and we'll go on and, you know, just do as much as we can to, you know, I'm especially heartened when I see young people in the audience. You know, they've been coming to the show, and it's just great because they are really touched by it, and they're, you know, sort of, it's like somebody's telling a part of their story. So that's been really heartening.
You mentioned, as you were talking early in this interview, about the founding of the Trevor Project and how you wanted to tell the story, and that's how Absolute Brightness came sort of out of that, of telling more stories. Then you mentioned you were a little bit ahead of It Gets Better, and I wanted to ask you if it is getting better, if there are fewer calls coming to the Trevor Project now, or if things are keeping a pace as they were in the late 90s, if there's still as much demand as ever for your services.
You know, these days we get about 45,000 calls a year at the Trevor Project, mm-hmm. on the Lifeline. Those are voice-to-voice calls. We've expanded the services to include Trevor Chat, Trevor Text, and also Trevor Space, which is a kind of Facebook for LGBT teens. Has about 150,000 young people on it, offering peer-to-peer support.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wish I could say that it's gotten better for young LGBT youth, but, you know, we also reach out to young people who are questioning, who don't really know what they are and haven't chosen a major, you know, or who don't want to actually declare themselves as anything. You know, they just want to be themselves. And, you know, I think we all know from our personal experience that going through adolescence is a very rough thing. It's really hard. And so we're here, you know, 24/7 for any young person who's dealing with issues of not just sexual identity or gender identity, but also just identity, which is what young people are sort of mandated to do. It's the period where they're coming into their beingness. I'd say that there's more of an effort being made nowadays to make it better, right?
Right.
For young people. And that wasn't there when we started at all. People weren't thinking about teenagers, you know, in crisis in this way back then. And I think that there's a lot more, you know, we have probably, I don't know, maybe 600 to 700 volunteers around the, you know, that work tirelessly to be there for these kids. And, you know, that wasn't there before. So it does get better, but it just doesn't get better automatically. I think what happens is that there are people in the world who are actually making it better and who are understanding that there's a problem, and they've got their eyes open a little bit more, and they're reaching out towards their young people in their life. And, you know, so it's complex. I mean, I just can't help but think about what's happening in Indiana and what's happening in California, you know, that I just think about these kids who are in the state while they're, all the adults in their state are arguing about their right to exist as fully fledged citizens or just people. And I think, okay, so here you are, you're 13, 14 years old, you know that you are gay or lesbian or transgender, and if you speak out, you're in jeopardy. If you keep quiet, you hate yourself, right? So I just feel for those kids who are in that state, who, while this thing is raging all around them, while people who've got this stuff all worked out are making a decision, they don't understand they're actually harming these young people while they're having this discussion. So, you know, that's why I think we all have to speak out for them and also be an ear to listen. And I think that wasn't in place, certainly wasn't in place when I was a kid, and wasn't in place 20 years ago. So in that sense, it's getting better.
James Lacine will perform The Absolute Brightness of Leonard Pelkey at Club Helsinki in Hudson, New York on April 12th at 8 p.m. as part of the Helsinki on Broadway series co-presented by Showstoppers New York. You can find links to more information at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.